Counterfeit by Michael Scriven. 5 p.m. Saturday the 1st of June 1940, Bray Dunes, Dunkirk. Somewhere, deep in the recesses of his consciousness, Paul could sense a nascent light. He couldn't see it, but he knew it was there. It was lodged in the depths of his being and struggling to come to the surface as a long-forgotten slumbering memory. It was a light that danced and played intermittently along the walls of his mind, like a torchlight flickering with varying degrees of intensity in a murky tunnel or a confined space. This evanescent and distant glimmer was awakening him gradually, nudging him back insistently to the turmoil of existence, back to a world in which he no longer seemed to have a part. The flickering light suddenly disappeared, obliterated by an all-enveloping darkness, and he felt himself being pulled away from the water's edge towards the centre of the beach. He was silently grateful to be propped against the side of an abandoned rowing boat that offered some protection from the surrounding destruction. He imagined that he heard the sound of familiar English voices, and then he lapsed back into unconsciousness. Slowly his mind cleared, and he felt the strength returning to his body. After several minutes, he found himself looking in fascination at a figure approaching him across the sands. He saw the figure waving his arms wildly and then start running towards him, brandishing a paper in his right hand. There was something uncannily familiar about the approaching figure, but it remained elusive. And then, with a sudden and dramatic realization, he knew that it was Joe. Paul struggled weakly to his feet, and they embraced each other, barely believing that it was possible that they were finally together again. Neither Joe nor Paul could speak. They could not express in words what they were feeling at that moment. Joe was overjoyed to see Paul again, but slightly hesitant to reveal that Catherine had been injured, that he hadn't protected her as he had promised. He embraced Paul and simply said, "Catherine is safe. Catherine is safe." He mutely handed Catherine's letter to him. It was snatched from his grasp by a man desperate for news of the woman at the centre of his life. Paul began eagerly devouring the words of love, written so recently, yet such a long time ago. Joe stepped back a few feet from Paul to enable him to read the letter from Catherine. He turned away and looked intently at the grey skyline, the debris and carnage on the beach, the blackness and despair everywhere, men struggling to get away, to keep a grip on their tenuous lives, to avoid the bombs and the bullets that were raining down from the sky. A poignant memory came flooding back to Joe, the moment when Paul had begun saying farewell to Catherine in Kharkov. He remembered seeing her embracing Paul and whispering in his ear. At the time, it had seemed to Joe that she had been trying to say something important to Paul. Joe had not been able to work out what. He would never know precisely what. But he was happy amidst the carnage of Dunkirk to be reunited with his friend and to know that he had finally successfully delivered what Paul had yearned to receive, a letter from Catherine. There was a scream of metal as a shell exploded on an abandoned lorry nearby. Shrapnel flew everywhere. Joe collapsed into Paul's arms. It was as if Paul's life had stopped, or rather, it was as if the recording of his life had been put on hold. He felt a strange sensation of warmth and wetness engulfing his body, The sky began spiralling uncontrollably before his eyes. His arms lost their feeling and became disconnected from his body. His mind went blank, and the world became a silent place, inhabited by gesticulating figures screaming noiselessly amidst the carnage of the killing fields. This numbing interlude lasted a mere second, but would subsequently be replayed endlessly in Paul's wounded imagination. The pause button on Paul's life was then violently switched off, and a stream of murderous sounds flooded back into his consciousness. Joe had collapsed into Paul's arms, blood spilling from shrapnel wounds in his head, in his arms, and in his chest. There was a strange look on Joe's face that Paul had never seen before, a curiously sad yet resigned look that signified shock and abandonment at the same time. Paul was drowning in blood. A blood-red stream was cascading over him, over his face, over his arms, over his hands, over his thoughts, over Catherine's letter, over all his love, over his love for Joe, over his love for Catherine, over his soul. And Joe was no more. And Joe was no more.